This episode is sponsored by Tunbridge Accountants. Are you a creative entrepreneur looking for financial support? Do you need clarity around your numbers or help with decisions related to your business finances? Do you even know what all the numbers mean? Before I worked with Tunbridge Accountants, I definitely didn't. Wendy and Lawton are not just accountants, they're your partners in navigating the complexities of business finance. They make VAT, corporation tax, cash flow management, all of this really simple, guiding you through all the decisions you need to make, whether that's a company purchase, setting up a new business, whether to register as a business. Wendy and Lawton can give you really honest, practical advice on everything. And by letting them take care of your business finances, it then frees you up to focus on what you do best, creating and selling your products. So thank you again to Tunbridge Accountants for sponsoring this podcast.
Welcome to the Bring Your Product Ideas to Life podcast. Practical advice and inspiration to help you create and sell your own physical products. Here's your host, Vicky Weinberg.
Today on the podcast, I'm talking to Holly Watson. Holly is the co-founder of the Zero Cafe and Ethical Emporium, a plastic-free cafe and community space in the heart of Tunbridge Wells. The Ethical Emporium provides an opportunity to other local independent designers, makers and brands to showcase their sustainable artisan wares all under one roof. Along with co-founder and best friend Charlotte Bauer, Holly is passionate about living a plastic-free lifestyle and encouraging others to do the same. I had a really great conversation with Holly. As you will hear in this conversation, Holly and Charlotte's business has pivoted many times over the past few years, partly from necessity, obviously, with COVID. And Holly also talks about some choices they've made to do things a little differently. And I really found their business model fascinating. The Zero Cafe is actually, and now the Ethical Emporium is actually quite local to me. I've been in there a few times and it's great to see how it's evolved over the years. So I really hope that you enjoyed this conversation with Holly. So hi Holly, thank you so much for being here.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you for having me.
So can we start with you please giving an introduction to yourself, your business and what you do?
Absolutely. So I'm Holly Watson. I'm one half of the Zero Waste Company. So I've run it with my business partner, Charlotte Bowyer, who is in the shop today. So the Zero Waste Company is a sustainable vegetarian and vegan cafe and emporium on the Pantiles in Tunbridge Wells. And we basically, it is kind of like running two businesses. So we have the cafe side of things, which is all kind of homemade on site, kind of delicious vegetarian and vegan food that we try and cater to as many kind of allergies and dietary requirements as possible, but it's kind of proper good cafe food. So, you know, toasties and soups and salads and things like that. And then the Ethical Emporium is our retail space, which is a kind of community-based space for local brands and sellers to sell their ethical and sustainable wares.
Amazing, thank you. Now, I know when you set up Zero Waste, which was 2-3 years ago, Holly?
Yeah, almost, we're in our third year now. Yeah.
I know that when you originally set it up, it was a slightly different model. So do you want to talk about what inspired you to start Zero Waste initially and what the business looked like almost 3 years ago?
Yeah, sure. So myself and Lottie were both, when we met, we both had 8-month-old baby boys. So we kind of met as freelancers and had kind of common ground on the fact that we were, I mean, I kind of jokingly say I'm a self-professed hippie, so I tend to kind of be more, you know, I'm always trying to sort of think of ways of like reducing waste and being really environmentally conscious and things like that. And Lottie's very similar. And we both were really frustrated with the kind of almost like the forced options of when you have children, of how much the packaging of everything increases, the kind of the throwaway mentality, everything is, you know, single use, disposable, and that whole culture, it's very hard to get out of. So we end up having a really good chat one day and talking about how we were trying to make environmentally conscious decisions, and that actually it's really hard to do because there's nowhere that you can really just go and shop easily whilst, you know, thinking about not buying lots of plastic or whatever. And so we kind of, the Zero Waste Company was born out of a frustration, I guess, of wanting to have access to alternatives to the supermarkets in and the kind of disposable culture that we live in. And initially we were kind of, we didn't really know what to do, and zero waste shops were quite a concept that was just coming into sort of the light. If you know, people were starting to kind of know about them, understand them. So we did our research, which is market research, and then found the place on the Pantiles, which, you know, with hindsight, you'd go, there's not much parking, because that's the thing everyone says to us now when they come shopping. It's like, there's not much parking. There is, but it's not on your doorstep as it is with some, you know, some of the other places in Tunbridge Wells. But and we basically, yeah, we decided to create a traditional zero waste shop, which is a refill shop. So initially it was, if you've ever been in our space, it's got a kind of a big front space and a smaller back space. So we decided to, the whole shop was the front part, and it was, you know, wall-to-wall gravity units filled with things like pasta, rice, grains, cereals, nuts, everything you could kind of imagine that you buy in bulk. And the way the zero waste model works is that you bring a container, you weigh it, fill it, weigh it again, and pay for it. So you're only paying for the goods, you're not paying for the packaging. So that's kind of how we started off. And, you know, it was amazing. We opened in November 2019 and we had a really, really good response from the community straight away. It was brilliant. People really coming on board with it and wanting to change their shopping habits and wanting to understand, you know, what it was we did. We converted the back part of the shop into a very small cafe at that point, and we just were like, we'll just sell coffee and cake. That's kind of how we started. Unfortunately, COVID came along, which is, I think, the story for so many businesses who started out around that time. For us, it was difficult because we didn't have any kind of buffer. We'd only been open like 5 months, and we just started to get, you know, a following and people coming in when obviously COVID shut a lot of that down. We were really fortunate that we were technically at that point, we were classed as essential because we sold food. And we were able to keep open during that time and, you know, started offering fruit and veg and deliveries and trying to service the community, because no one, I think, knew at that point it was going to go on for as long as it did. You know, we thought it might be a couple of months, but the whole business model had to change to allow for what happened during that time. So we just kind of adapted. But when things reopened again in 2020 in the summer for that brief period, we realized that there seemed to be more people wanting the cafe side and asking us where our lunch menu was and things like that. So we kind of adapted as much as we could. We started offering proper food, if you like, and we hired a chef, Jen, who basically does everything for us. She's incredible. Me and Lottie don't come from chef or cafe backgrounds, so she basically, we luckily got her. She's worked in, you know, cafes and restaurants in London, and she's amazing, but she'd moved to Westerham and she's ours now. So basically she does all of our kind of vegan, vegetarian food. She makes for us and only us. And so the kind of the cafe offering started to increase. But it's a funny thing, because it's hard for us to sort of not blame COVID. But what ended up happening was, especially during the winter months, I think people, with the lockdowns constantly coming into play and then not being locked down and then you are, and then it was tears and all of this kind of thing, I think people's habits just changed and everyone reverted to shopping online. And it got to kind of whenever that last lockdown lifted, that we realized that the shopping habits for the zero waste side of things hadn't picked up as much as we'd have liked. So we flipped the shop and the cafe, so that the cafe became the bigger space and the shop became the smaller space. And then I guess that did have a bit of a knock-on effect, because then there was less stuff to sell. And then it's a funny thing, like, it's hard to take, like, to admit when you realize that something's not working as a business and going, this isn't doing what we had hoped. And it took us quite a long time to, I think, kind of get to the realization point that we might need to change that side of the business completely, which is then what we did recently.
Thank you for all of that, and we'll talk about how your business has evolved shortly. But I'd love to talk a little bit more about zero waste. So just to pick up on what you were saying just then, do you have any thoughts on perhaps why zero waste, you know, the refill element didn't pick up again after COVID?
I think we're part of a couple of groups on Facebook that are zero waste shop owners. And we've been part of that group since we launched, you know, a few years ago. And in that time, we've seen a massive influx of people opening shops. And then in this last 6 months, I'd say there's been at least 25 that have closed. And it's nationwide, maybe even international, because there are some international people within that group. But everyone's saying the same thing. And it does feel like COVID, it's funny, it had a sort of a knock-on effect in two different ways. Like it became, everyone was going, oh, if you don't use it, you lose it. So they all really wanted to support small businesses, local businesses. But it seemed a step too far to then ask them to change their shopping habits completely. So it seemed that it went from one way to the other. You either have people who want to change their shopping habits and they're happy to make the effort, because it is more effort to shop that way. It is. It does require a level of planning and thinking about it. Even if you come with no containers and fill up with bags, which you're very welcome to do, you've still got to decant them when you get home. You've got to think about how you're going to store that. You kind of need to have a bit of an idea of what you want to buy. And so I think there's a level of care and consideration that you need that some people just don't have the mental capacity for at the moment because of all of the other stresses that COVID has created. And, you know, people's whole like lives changed in the sense that most people now haven't gone back to work full time in their offices. And everyone's kind of adapted to this new way of living where perhaps they are spending more time at home or they are, you know, they are prioritizing different things. And I think convenience, it goes a long way in terms of why people do what they do and make the choices that they make. And it is more convenient to go to a supermarket and buy everything there and order all online and have it delivered when you know you're working from home on this day. And, you know, I think there's an element of that. But it does seem across the board, it's not just us. It's, we've seen it with people who are just zero waste shops. We're very lucky in the sense that we have the cafe, so we've been able to adapt to make that, you know, more of what we offer now. But those who can't do that or haven't got that opportunity are closing because they're just not being used. And I guess there's an element of some supermarkets have introduced refill sections, but I don't think that's it. I think it's about the mentality since COVID of what people are willing to spend time doing, what they're willing to focus on. And it just doesn't seem to be the right time now for zero waste, which is a real shame. And I find it very hard to say it because obviously it was our passion for so long, but I've had to kind of come to the conclusion because, you know, we are running a business and when it doesn't make you any money at all, it's not viable. So, you know, you have to find solutions outside of that that still kind of sit within your ethos. It's a tricky one. I don't have all the answers.
thank you for sharing that, because I hope you don't mind me asking the question. And the reason I ask is that as a consumer, I have seen zero waste shops pop up just locally, you know, in the area we're both in, Kent. I've seen zero waste shops come and I've seen some go. And I just found that baffling because it kind of felt like, and it probably was pre-COVID, it kind of felt like it was getting popular, gaining traction. Yeah, and then suddenly it felt like everything had changed again. And I wasn't quite sure why. So thank you for explaining that. And as you say, that might not be the full picture, but I think it probably is.
It's very hard. It's hard to know exactly why. I can only go on what myself and other owners are all just discussing as people who actually want to run these businesses. And I guess, you know, there's probably other factors that I haven't even considered. And it's a shame because there are still people who want to shop that way, who are really hardcore and dedicated. But, you know, it's difficult. So for us, when we made a decision literally very recently, I mean, last week recently, to just no longer sell refill food at all. So we don't have any more gravity units in zero. We still sell the refill cleaning and household products because they've always maintained the same. They've always been popular and people have always come in for those. But food is a funny one. So when we made that decision, it was quite a hard decision to sort of essentially close that chapter completely. And yet, you know, lots of people haven't noticed or cared, but there are people who are like, oh, But I used to come to you, and it's heartbreaking, like knowing that you did have, you know, a couple of people who would really still support that. But, you know, you need 20, 30 people a week, not two. Yeah. So, you know, it's just a decision that we have to make. And it's hard. It's really difficult when you know other people have the same passion as you. But, you know.
Well, like you say, it's a business. And if it's the household items that are still continuing to sell, then it makes sense that those would be the ones you continue to stock. Because yeah. I guess also, I don't know, but with anything consumable, I guess there's the sourcing, and then how long can you physically hold the stock before it goes out of date? There must be a lot that goes into
the
thing. That.
We kind of learned the hard way that, especially because we used to have a huge range, and we reduced a little bit when we moved from the cafe side into the shop side, like when we swapped the areas around, we lost a little bit, but not much. But the managing of the best before dates, and the managing of the rotation of stock, and the ordering, and also along with COVID, you know, and Brexit, was the whole thing of suddenly the suppliers' minimum order quantities were going from sort of being £300 per order to £1,000 an order, which is a massive jump for a small business. And it meant you'd have to literally wait until every single thing had run out, which point you're frustrating people who are like, have you still not got any porridge oats? I came last week, you didn't have any. And you're like, yeah, but I can't just buy all porridge oats. I have to buy everything. And it's a big kind of ask to spend a lot of money sourcing that. And then for it to sit and not be bought, it goes against the whole waste thing. And this is what me and Lottie came to realize, is that, you know, some things just, even though, you know, like kidney beans, they're not really going to go out of date. They have to have a date on them, but they're fine because they're a dried bean and they will last years. But you can't legally sell that. So even though you know it's okay, you can't legally sell it. So there's a lot of kind of red tape surrounding, you know, food, and EHOs come in and they want to know how you're maintaining all of your stock and all your best before date, all of that stuff. And it's such a huge amount of admin and time for something that doesn't essentially pay, that I do understand why people just say, I can't do it. And, you know, maybe the answer is to find more sustainable packaging. I mean, I hate even saying that because it makes me just go, because buying in plastic is the worst, because they are single use and they are the worst kinds as well. Those particular plastics become microplastics, which are the ones that really do kill fish and get into fetuses and everything else that you've seen in the news recently. So maybe the answer is to go back to paper or card packaging or something else, if this is not what people want. It's very hard.
Yeah, it sounds really hard. And I'm, as we're talking, I'm just seeing like how much Lottie and yourself have adapted over the past few years, because it seems like, you know, it's continually, things change. Yeah, and you're having to make really hard decisions a lot, it sounds like.
Yeah, it's funny, we're both very good at adapting. That's one of the things that we kind of can say about ourselves, in that, you know, as business owners, we don't shy away from having to like make difficult decisions and hard choices and actually do things that make us feel uncomfortable. But we'd never do anything that would challenge our original ethos. So everything we've ever done business-wise is always, we've got the same kind of core belief at its structure. So we're always kind of saying, like, is what we're going to do still going to benefit the environment as opposed to, you know, harm it in any way? And does making this decision mean that it's going to still be beneficial to people? And, you know, so we don't just kind of go, oh, it's not making us any money, we'll just do something else. Like, there's always an environmental factor that comes into play with what we do, because I just don't feel like I could go in to work every day and call ourselves a zero waste company without having the original core beliefs still. And I think Lottie's the same, but we've had to kind of become slightly more business sort of minded, you know, like, it would be lovely to do all of this stuff for the community and give back and not have to worry about it making any money, but it's not reality, especially when you have a business on the Pantiles that costs a fortune. And I mean, you know, we chose to set up there, and in hindsight, you know, we both say sometimes it's the cost of being on the Pantiles, it's just already higher than any other place in Tunbridge Wells. And is it worth paying all that extra money to sort of be in that kind of location, you know, all these things. But it's funny because ultimately the answer is still yes. So we just need to make it work for us and do it in a way that still has that community feel and still challenges people's buying habits and all of this kind of thing. Like, as long as we're still meeting those sort of initial, I guess, points that we started out with, I'm okay with it. But yeah, there's definitely been things, you know, definitely made mistakes and things that we kind of, you know, learned from. But I guess every business owner does that.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And with the location, I can certainly see that it would be like an expensive place to be. But I guess one of the advantages is that flexible space you've had. So you were talking about how, you know, the cafe was small and now the cafe is larger and you've been able to really adapt that space. So I guess that is one of the plus points, because I mean, I've obviously been in and it's a nice big space.
Yeah, it is. It is a really large space. And, you know, we never wanted it to have that kind of clinical, because some zero waste shops are very sort of white and, you know, clean, and I kind of didn't want that. I was very much about wanting to have some of our personality. You know, I'm quite a kind of extrovert character, and I'm very creative and I like how things look. So for me, the aesthetics of Zero has been as much of a joy to me to create as the actual business itself. You know, it's like I've got wallpaper everywhere, and you know, it's the lighting and everything we really think about, because for us it's not just about having a shop or having a cafe, it's about creating a space people want to spend time in and that they can hire out to have parties or whatever. So we constantly try and have as many, like, you know, strings to our bow, if you like, as possible. And yeah, the adaptability of being able to move things around and having a husband who's quite handy is helpful, because my poor husband, I'm like, so I need you to build me a veg unit. I'm like, and now that veg unit needs to become a display unit because we don't sell veg anymore. So can you adapt it to, you know, and he just kind of like comes in and just builds stuff whenever I need him to, which is very helpful. But yeah, it's, I think sometimes having the vision, I'll often be like, I know exactly how I want it to look. And then I just need someone to help me kind of do it. And Lottie's just like, just tell me what you want me to do and I'll do it. So we work quite well together in that sense. And I think, you know, if anything, I'm really proud of the space we've created, because I do love it. I love being there and I love how it looks. And, you know, I love it when people come in and they're like, oh, I've never been here before. And, you know, it still gives me that feeling that of excitement that I want to be there. So I think as long as we've all still got that, we'll carry on. We'll keep adapting.
That's good. And I will also say that I'll make sure that when this episode goes live, we include some photos as well, so people can actually see the space, because I think that'll be really good. So speaking of adapting, let's talk about the Ethical Emporium, what it is, why you're doing it, which you've touched on partly already. Yeah. And let's start there.
Okay, so we launched it back in April. And it was basically, the idea came from the fact that the model that we were currently, so the traditional retail model as it stands is you have a space, you buy things at wholesale, you sell them at retail and you make a profit margin. That's your average shop. That's what everybody does. And that's what we were doing even as a refill shop. But what that does mean is that it's on you as the business owner to buy whatever stock you think people are going to like and make sure you choose the correct stuff and hope it sells. And you might make a mistake, so something might sit on the shelf for a while and no one wants it, or you might find something that everybody loves and you're winning. But that model is, although it's kind of the most stereotypical one that most people use, it's not actually the best model for the brands that you're buying in and the business owner, because you can't easily make changes without either spending money and then, you know, having to either put something on sale if it doesn't sell or whatever, but also the cash flow of paying suppliers and trying to manage that. So, you know, knowing you've got to make a certain amount of sales, but then you need to pay them. And I think for us, the stress of that whilst running the cafe was quite intense. And it just meant we weren't always on top of, you know, when customers were asking for stuff, we weren't even able to sometimes afford to buy something in just to see if it was going to sell. So we kind of looked back on, there used to be a pop-up called Support Local in Tunbridge Wells, who was run by a girl called Hope, who has moved to Cornwall now. But I remember shopping in her space. She ran kind of over Christmas, and I spoke to her because me and Lottie had both said, you know, ideally what we want is to support local brands. We want to support people, designers, makers, people who don't have a shop on the Pantiles, and see how we can get them into the shop. But obviously most of them work on the wholesale model or buy or return potentially. That they're the kind of two main options. So instead we looked into the pop-up model, which is essentially making your space quite unified. So, you know, having, because we've never, with zero waste stuff, everything's always been upcycled. Our shelves were here, would have been here, nothing was the same. So it was a bit of a change for us, but we essentially invested in lots of kind of uniform shelving and uniform sort of table displays. And basically we decided to contact as many local smaller brands, makers, people who, but they also had to have an ethical or sustainable kind of, you know, platform, I guess. And the idea was that we rented our space to them and gave them an opportunity to have products in a shop somewhere on the Pantiles, because we get a lot of tourist trade as well, and also the cafe trade. So trying to create a reason for people to come into the shop area and see something new. And we were really lucky because we managed to find, I think it's like 8 or 9 brands when we first launched, who kind of just took a bit of a chance on us and said, okay, yeah, we'll give this a go. And basically we've created this emporium now that has, I think, last count, I think we've got like 18 brands in there at the moment, and we're still growing, still looking for new brands. But the idea is that they rent a shelf from us, and it's just a flat fee that they pay on a weekly basis, and everything they make is their own. And it was really important to us that we didn't even want to handle the kind of financial transactions or anything. So they get their money directly. So sellers literally have their own profiles on our till system, and whatever they sell, the money goes directly into their bank account, and all we do is invoice for the shelf rental or table rental. And it's been working really well. So we're kind of in month 2, nearly 3. We offered, obviously, as we started, we didn't really know where we were going to kind of go with it. So we offered some deals for people to kind of come in and just see, but we only ever asked for a 2-week sign up, just so that people can see if it's for them. And so far we've got some incredible brands, and I'm really proud of it, because it's so amazing for us to see people selling, and it is selling. People are coming in and knowing that, you know, we still earn, because we have the shelf rental, and that's we don't have to have any more involvement than that, which is great for us as business owners. And then people can swap in and out products as they want, if they think something's going to sell, if they want to do promotions, if they want to do Father's Day things or Easter stuff. It means that they have full autonomy over that. And, you know, essentially they can see what is popular, because we send them till reports of what they, you know, have sold, and they can make changes as appropriate. So it's working really well. And for the sellers who are currently in the Emporium, you know, they've given us some really good feedback. We promote them on Instagram and things as well, and they do the same. And it's just the loveliest collaboration that I could have wished for. And I still feel like we're kind of giving the community something. And actually the space means that, I like to sort of say, we're like an ethical Oliver Bonus. So now you can come in, you can treat yourself to something, you can buy gifts, you can, you know, grab something almost like touristy. There's like Tunbridge Wells themed stuff in there as well. So it's got a really beautiful mix, an eclectic mix, but mainly stuff that we would never have been able to just kind of do on a whim, you know, a bit of a whim back in the day on the old model. So it means that we've allowed the space to become like really eclectic and support these incredible brands. So it's I'm really proud of it, and I'm really hoping that this is how we're going to kind of move forward with the Emporium.
That sounds like a great model. And as you say, it benefits everyone. From a customer's point of view, you're going to find so many things that you might not find, well, you definitely wouldn't find in the high street, or, you know, yeah, if you went absolutely. Up to Royal Victoria Place, or even if you went online. It's just really, because lots of people, I think, want to shop local mm-hmm. businesses, small businesses, and this just makes it really easy.
Well, this is the thing. It's a bit like, you know, lots of people shop on Etsy. I mean, I do. Like when I think about buying someone a present, I'll go on Etsy, because I know at least it's benefiting a kind of a small actual person, you know, who's designing something or making something. And I think the thing with Etsy though is you don't always know how local they are, and you end up buying something from Scotland or whatever, which is great because you're supporting a seller in Scotland. But I think the feeling of being able to actually support actual local businesses who can also come in and do meet the makers. And that's another thing we offer. You know, they can come in at any time, they can be there, they can run workshops from the cafe in the evenings. We've kind of built it to be a real collaboration so that everybody wins. You know, for us, we want more people coming into the Emporium. We want the sellers to succeed. So, you know, we have a member of staff in there that talks about them and kind of is really kind of clued up on all the sellers and what they do and their USPs and, you know, whether they're a mum of two or, you know, why they created their business. So we have all of that information so that when customers come in, we can shout about all the brands. And I love the fact that there are so many quirky things that we'd never have been able to have before, but that they all still tick the sustainable model. You know, like every brand that we have, they don't use plastic. Most of them have some kind of either recycled packaging or they've considered, you know, that it's an organic cotton because we sell clothing. And there's just so many different things. There's beautiful candles and products that you really just kind of know, like you can feel really good about buying. And that for me is like, that's a real win. And it's really showing because people are coming in and they are buying. So it's really nice to sort of have the support of our community, but also be supporting other brands.
Yeah, I think that's all really nice. As you say, it's a business model that works for everyone. Yeah. And I know at the moment you're looking for local sellers, but do you have any plans to do something similar anywhere else? Yeah,
I think one of the things we kind of realise is that the whole zero waste ethos that is so ingrained in myself and Lottie, it's not going anywhere. And so we kind of thought, well, okay, just because the traditional zero waste model refill side of things hasn't worked for us doesn't mean that we can't still do something within that space. And I feel like the Ethical Emporium is that. I feel like it's a really good alternative to essentially what we were trying to do before. So me and Lottie at the moment are kind of exploring the idea of creating ethical emporiums elsewhere in Kent and finding other locations and continuing this kind of pop-up model in other spaces, because there are a lot of empty units in so many towns now and on high streets and things that could potentially be utilized. So our next step is to contact, you know, local agents in sort of various different towns and see whether this is viable, you know, to even work on a pop-up basis for maybe only, you know, a couple of months or 3 months, to just create a platform for sellers in that space, in that area, in that region, to, I guess, not launch their brands, but give them an opportunity that doesn't require them to be setting up at markets on a weekly basis. Because, you know, a lot of smaller brands, that's what they do. They're slogging it out all the time, creating, setting up a stall, being there for 8 hours and then leaving again. And that's kind of their only way of, I guess, having a physical space to sell. So if we were to be able to kind of enable that for brands, even for a kind of 3 month period, it would hopefully be really beneficial because, you know, we're essentially filling an empty unit potentially, and landlords are desperate to have anything right now, you know, until they can get a new sort of permanent, you know, next sort of person in. But it would also mean that, you know, you're taking away the stress of having to man a stall or, you know, give your time the whole time, because obviously it would be something we would hopefully be able to cover with staffing and things our end. And so to, I guess it's like creating a mobile ethical emporium, but on a pop-up basis in other local towns, and just seeing whether that is something that's viable and whether that's something people support. So it's still very early stages, but it's definitely something we want to look into.
I think that's a really great idea. And especially as when you talk about upsellers doing markets, I think a lot of products do sell really well when people can see them, touch them. It can be, personally, I found from back when I was selling my products that I sold really well when people could actually pick them up and touch them. And but it's really hard to have that opportunity because, as you say, you have to go to a market, you have to pay for that pitch. And I know that your model involves people paying for a space, but actually there's a lot more involved in paying for a pitch and decorating your space and filling it up and
set up on the same day as well, that the kind of getting there early, getting it all set up and then getting it all down again, and, you know, all weathers and that kind of thing. There's a lot of other factors, and also a lot of brands, you know, people work alongside. Yeah. You know, these are still kind of, you know, smaller brands where it's kind of from your kitchen table, essentially. And it just offers a bit of a, I guess it's a more convenient way for sellers to try and get their brands out there. And, you know, for us, again, just the minimum sign up only being 2 weeks is it's pretty much just, it gives them an opportunity to see whether it's even worth their time. And most people will take that small risk to see whether something could really benefit them. And, you know, for us, just in our emporium, it's, I'd say at the moment we've got a 70% retention rate, which I think is pretty good. We know that not every product is going to sell. Sometimes it just is about the demographic. Sometimes it's about the product itself, or how, you know, it, some things do sell better online, funnily enough, but I think you're right. I think someone can actually physically see something. And also I think being able to go back to something is quite interesting. So if you see something in market and you go home, you go, oh, I wish I bought that now. Like, it gives consumers the opportunity to come back and go, I really like that. Actually, do you know what? I'm going to go back and get that candle, or I'm going to go back and get that scarf or whatever. Knowing that it's going to be there, you know. And that's the thing about having a physical bricks and mortar, is that essentially you're tying yourself to a premises for a certain amount of time, and that gives customers a window as well to kind of have a think and return, rather than that impulsive, I've got to get it because I'm not going to see it again type thing. So it's got,
yeah,
it's kind of, I guess there's two modes. Like, sometimes that's a good thing for markets, because if they think they're not going to be able to get it again, they'll get it right there. But from a kind of normal consumer sort of buying habits, people like to sort of look at things seven times, it has to cross their mind before they really consider it. So it's just allowing for that, I think. So yeah, I'd really like to think it's got legs. We'll see.
I think so, because another advantage I can see for sellers is it gives you a chance to sell, to test, yeah. Okay, if I put these two products on a table, which one sells the most? Or especially for some, and I know this isn't the aim, but if there were sellers who are thinking, one day I'd like to be stocked in, I don't know, Oliver Bone or wherever, it gives them an opportunity to say, okay, when people see my products on a shelf with other products, do they pick them up? Do they buy them? Yeah. What do they think about them? I just think that's a really good opportunity as well to see how well your product sells in retail, get some data without spending a load of money or taking a really big risk.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a lot of, it requires a lot of effort as well to get into any big brand, you know, like to be stocked in somewhere like, you know, everyone's dreams, like be stocked in Harvey Nichols or Harrods or whatever. But to actually get to that point is incredibly difficult. You often end up getting into the slightly longer invoice terms and things as well, because that's what those brands can do, because they've got that power. And so it kind of removes some of that, and it actually keeps it on that local level and that community level that I think people after COVID are wanting more of. You know, they are wanting to, they are sort of realizing what's important, and, you know, spending time with people and having access to things like, you know, being able to go to the shops with your family or whatever. It's almost like that's kind of a positive from COVID, but I think, you know, the supporting local thing does seem to have helped. So obviously for us, it wasn't necessarily, I think it was just too much to support local and change your shopping habits. So it's like an either or. So this is a good compromise, and it allows people to feel good about their shopping choices, which, you know, it's funny, but it's a very psychological thing, shopping. And I think women more than men consider it more in terms of what they're buying and how it affects anything other than just, I like that, I'm buying it. So I've definitely noticed, you know, we've got repeat customers now who say they don't go anywhere else. Now that they know that we've got the Emporium, they just come to us whenever they want a gift. And that's really nice, because it's only been a couple of months. And if we've started to get that now, then I'm looking at how that could possibly grow. It's, you know, I'm hoping it is as positive as I think it is.
I think it is. Like I say, I don't see, nobody loses in this situation. I just think there's just positives for everyone, which is really good, because there aren't many things in life actually where it's all positive for everyone. No, so
yeah, especially at the moment, it's I think people need something to kind of make them feel good. And, you know, it's hard to have a small business at the moment. It's hard to get your product out there. It's hard to get people to, you know, consider spending on luxuries now with everything that's going on, you know, with all the cost of living crisis and everything, I think people are tightening their belts. And so they're taking longer to make a bigger purchase, or, you know, or they're really thinking more about, do I really want this? Is this the right thing for me, before they buy it? So it gives an opportunity, I guess, to put that forward and know that you're doing the right thing, because, you know, it's so much nicer to be able to give someone a gift that you've bought from somebody local and you can tell a little story about, because for us, the brand stories are really important, rather than just grabbing something from, I don't know, John Lewis, say, and giving them that. You know, I think the personal side of things is much more important to people now. So, and it's what brands, you know, really, I guess, I come from a marketing and social media background, so I'm quite lucky in the sense of my experience is understanding what makes people stop and stop scrolling or engage in a post, for example. And it's the same thing with products. It's knowing that your personal story and something is an identifier. If someone can identify with you, they're more likely to buy into you. So it's that, but on a bigger scale.
That makes sense. Thank you. And let's keep an eye on the time for your feet for you, Holly. But before we finish, I would love to talk about your own products as well. Mm-hmm. And I know you mentioned this again, this is something fairly new, but yeah. I know you've been selling your own brand of candles. So do you want to talk a bit about how this came about, how you've created them, and how that fits in? Because let's face it, you've got a lot going on.
I have got a lot going on, yeah. The thing, before we kind of really decided to change the model to the Ethical Emporium, we'd already decided that the retail model wasn't working for us, because it's that middleman thing of, you know, buying from this person, they have to make a profit margin, and then so do you. And, you know, so I looked at initially just looking at the kind of products that we knew sold well. So for us, the homeware stuff was actually selling really well in the shop. So I wanted to look into making my own candles, which I used to do years ago, and just hadn't ever considered selling. I just did it kind of as a nice hobby. So I started looking into potentially what I would buy if I was going to buy a candle for somebody or for myself, and did quite a lot of research just based on, you know, the most ethical sourced, you know, wax and fragrances and wicks and everything. It's like, it is a minefield, you know. But I am very creative and I do like to have a creative outlet. So for me, I was kind of like, you know what, I'll just trial some and I'll see how it goes. So initially it was just a case of, I started off trying to do essential oils, which is actually really hard to do. So hats off to anyone who sells essential oil candles, because to get the right scent through, but also there's a lot of, there's like labeling and legal requirements that you have to have with like all of the different, you know, sort of, everything, warning labels, all of it. And I was a bit like, do you know what, I don't want to go down that route. So instead I tried to find the most ethical, non-toxic fragrance oil suppliers, which I did find, and then created some candles just off fragrances that I loved. I created a brand that is separate to Zero, because essentially it was like a separate entity, but also because I come from like a branding background. So I sort of understand the importance of having the brand story and it being different to, you know, people think of Zero, they think of a cafe and the pencils. And obviously that's not what I wanted for something I was making. So the brand is called Wander and Wild. And the way that the scents I've created work are, there are Wander scents and there are Wild scents. So the Wander scents are the ones that evoke memories of places that you've been or traveled or want to go to. So there's one called Bora Bora, which is, you know, like coconuts, and it's not too tropical. There's kind of hints of bergamot and things in there as well, give it a bit of a depth. But the idea is that you've got kind of places, and then you've got the wild, which is more the botanical sense. So I've got one called Wonderland, which is like sort of a Turkish rose and geranium scent. So essentially the branding for me was having two things which are really important to me, which is kind of traveling and having experiences. I tend not to buy material things. I spend time in places, and if I'm going to spend on anything, it'll be a holiday or a trip somewhere. So I suppose that for me was really important, that I actually could evoke, because I think scent is really important. Scent can, it's a bit like music. It can take you somewhere immediately, like, you know, a scent of like fresh bread, and it reminds you of walking past a cafe when you were in France 4 years ago, you know, that kind of thing was what I wanted to try and evoke. So I created, I think I've got 6 scented candles now, and they're all made with organic 100% soy wax and organic cotton wicks as well. Basically they are in the Emporium at the moment. Although I say that, I have definitely not made very many recently because I've been really busy and I've been on holiday, so I need to make some more. But I have I think 6 fragrances at the moment, and it's just given me like a bit of artistic free rein that I don't get so much anymore, because I like being creative and I like, you know, I love doing branding and creating that side of things. So like designing the labels and things, I really found joy in. They've been selling quite well. I find it really hard to talk about my own products. I'm like, yeah, they're really good.
That's really good. It's really good they've been selling well as well. Yeah. Because it sounds like, you know, it's something you did almost not, I know it's a business, but it also sounds like something you're getting a lot of joy from as well.
Yeah, I just really loved, I like experimenting and I liked finding, you know, God, I went through so many fragrances before I decided on the ones that I really liked and was testing them and getting the girls at work to kind of tell me which ones were their favourites. And, you know, it's just nice because it's something different. And I don't really see it as like a money maker at the moment. It was more just a kind of, can I do this? Can it compete with other people's brands? And so far it can, which is great. But it's something, it does require time, and I don't have a lot of that at the moment. So it's not, I'm not necessarily kind of gunning for this to be the new big brand of Zero or whatever, but it is nice to know that it's something I can do. When I've got some time, I'll make some more and make sure that I can get them on the shelves.
Yeah, and I think that is, like you said, that's a really nice way of looking at it, that if you've got time and you can make some and you can get them up in the shop, then great. Yeah. But it's not like your business is not like your key focus, and no, exactly. It doesn't have to be making you money.
Yeah. No, it's just a nice to have at the moment. And, you know, if it became more popular or more in demand, then I'd give it more time. But at the moment, I just think it's one of those things. I just wanted to see if I could do it. And now I've, you know, essentially got everything. So when I do have time, I now can just spend a little bit of time creating some candles. And it is, I find it really therapeutic. Lottie finds it really boring. It's quite funny. She's like, I want to make candles. And then she was like, oh yeah, no, I don't really want to make candles. I was making loads. I was like, all right, come make some candles. And then she was like, oh, I didn't realize it was going to be like this. Okay. So that's where we differ. But I really enjoy like making something, you know, and the whole process I like.
Yeah. That's brilliant. And I've actually got 2 more questions. So I've just thought of another one as you referenced Lottie then, which I hope you don't mind me asking. I'm just really curious actually as to how you find running a business, you know, as a pair. So, you know, your business partners, because lots of my guests have been solopreneurs and running their businesses by themselves and making all the decisions. Do you have any thoughts or advice for, you know, how to run a business with a friend and stay friends?
The funny thing is, I think everybody who meets us just has this assumption that me and Lottie are like lifelong friends, that we've known each other for years and then we started to come up with this. But actually, we met in January 2019, and we opened Zero in November 2019. So we became business partners, we became friends, but we weren't people who'd known each other for years. And I think actually that's been really helpful. I don't know if I could do this with a best friend, you know, somebody who knows me inside out, back to front, all my flaws, all of that. You know, it's actually really nice to, I think I'm very lucky. Me and Lottie met and immediately connected. Neither of us can really understand why. And, you know, there are those things where people say it's like it was meant to be, but it does feel like it was meant to be, because we just got each other within like a day. And we met because we both had babies the same age and were trying to find childcare options because we were freelancers, and we were like, we could maybe look after each other's kids while we're trying to work. And that's kind of how we started. And then we found out that our boys were born a day apart, and I had a scheduled C-section, and I was bumped because of an emergency to the next day, and Lottie was the emergency. So we didn't even know each other then, and then met 8 months later, and then found out that we had kind of had this crazy story where actually, you know, she essentially took my C-section slot, which is fine. But that's kind of, it's a funny thing to kind of realize. And then off the back of that, we just, I don't know, we both just were like, we just want to do something together. And we were writing business plans within 3 weeks of being kind of having met, essentially. But I think for us, our biggest pro is that we have very different skill sets. And we're very lucky because somehow we've managed to find polar opposites. So Lottie does all of our finances, VAT returns, tax stuff, HR, contracts. Like, she's all over legal stuff. She knows everything about EHO, like regulations, all of that, like food, hygiene. She does all of that. She literally keeps a handle on how, like, making sure that we are functioning legally and properly. And she's just incredible, like with a spreadsheet. She can knock a spreadsheet up and smash it out in like 30 minutes. And I could do the same, but it would take me a whole day. You know, like, I just don't have that. It's almost like she's got a numbers brain and everything. She's just like, duh, 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 right, done. And I'm like, okay. Whereas I'm very creative. I come from marketing, social media, branding background. So the aesthetics and the kind of brand and what Zero looks like is more me. And I do all of our social media and our website. And I'm also more operational, although that's slightly by accident because Lottie decided to have another baby. I was like, don't have a baby in the first year. And then she did. But but so she was kind of a little bit out, like during that whole kind of COVID era. You know, she had a little baby. So I tended to be more operational in the shop. And then she was more behind the scenes. So it worked really well. And the thing is, obviously, like, I don't think we've ever argued. We'll disagree on things. And, you know, I'll tell her that she's nuts about various things because she does come up with some crazy ass ideas that I'm like, what are you doing? But I'm like a bit of a voice of reason. And then somehow we managed to find middle ground that works. So, but we are very similar. We're both quite impulsive. And I say we're both quite adaptable. So that's been a real pro for us. But I think communication, that's probably our biggest thing. We talk all the time, and to our husband's annoyance, you know, I'm constantly on my phone. And I think anyone who runs a business knows, even if you run it on your own, you're constantly working. It's very hard to switch off and be very disciplined about doing so. And I'm not disciplined, and nor she. So we're a nightmare. It'll be like 10 o'clock at night. I've just had a thought, and like, you know, my husband's just like, why are you still on your phone? Are you working? And I'm like, no, I'm not. But I guess the fact that we communicate all the time means we both are always on the same page. And that's really important. I think if you don't communicate, that's the, like, or if you don't say if something is bothering you or if you're unhappy about something, that's like the beginning of the end. It's for us, we've always said that, like, if we're unhappy about something or we think something is changing, we talk about it immediately. And it's made a massive difference to how we work.
That's really useful. And I think as well, something else I took from what you've just been saying is that I also think it's probably a bonus that you both have really clearly defined roles.
Yeah.
Because I can imagine it would be hard if you were both trying to manage your Instagram account, or you both wanted to, you know, do or had strong views about something. It must make things a lot easier when you sort of know, okay, you do this and I do that, and of course we talk and discuss, but that must really help as well.
It's funny, we kind of never initially set out our job roles, but it just was so clear from the beginning. You know, I design stuff, so anything design based, whether it's menus, website, Instagram, anything, even like coming down to like how we decorate the shop, that's very much me. And Lottie's really happy to be led on that, which is great, because I have such strong ideas. I find it really difficult. If somebody else was like, I want to do it like this, I'd be like, no, no, we're not doing it like that. But she's so kind of chill. She's like, yeah, fine, do whatever, I trust you. And I think I trust her to do, like, I never ask about finances, really. I hate finding out about the finances side of things. I'm like, oh, it's really stressful. So we've sort of naturally just got our strengths, and it works really well. But I think you're right. I think if we ever were to sort of cross over, which, you know, there's been a couple of things where we've both sort of almost accidentally started doing the same thing, but it becomes clear quite quickly who is probably best suited to that task, and then we just hand it over. So yeah, I think that and communicating is probably the biggest thing for us, definitely.
Thank you. And I know I did throw that question at you, but as we were talking, obviously Lottie came up so much, I thought actually that would be good to talk about. So I only have one more question now, you'll be pleased to know probably, which is, what is your number one tip for other small product businesses? What's one thing you'd like people to take away?
I think, so because I come from marketing and social media, it's kind of ingrained into me that that is one of your biggest platforms of promotion. So obviously it's not the only one, but we do live in a very online world now. So having your brand on social media platforms and having a website are kind of, I think, your two most important factors of running a business, if you like. But from a kind of personal level, if you're trying to sell a product, the very best way you can do that is to actually not actively sell it, but talk about anything that would, I guess, be relatable to a consumer. So if you're selling a candle and you put a picture of a candle on your Instagram, even if it's the most beautiful candle and picture you've ever seen, it's probably going to get a bit of a kind of a token like, you know, rarely is someone going to comment or engage in a post like that. If you put a picture of your child holding that candle, your engagement will double. If you put a picture of a dog with your candle, it will triple. There is something about people, pets, babies that is an immediate relatable factor for people, and it makes them stop. So I always say to people when I used to do their social media for them, I was like, I need photos of you. And they're like, what? No, I don't want to be in pictures. And I was like, you need to be in pictures. You'll notice as a small business, every post that has an about you, a kind of even a look what I've been doing today, and that, and you're sitting in the sunshine drinking a smoothie that has nothing to do with selling candles, that will guarantee get more engagement and more people wanting to find out about you and what you do than a picture of your candle. So if anything, it's that people sell, not products. People will always be the one defining factor that make you either choose to buy or not buy. So if you can relate to somebody, and even if it's a picture of them with their three children on the sofa and you're calling it a duvet day or whatever, those kind of honest posts on a business page, people are always really frightened to do because they're like, oh, but it's not the brand. But actually it is the brand, because everything that you are is your brand, especially if you are a single kind of, you know, designer maker of some sort. So that's my kind of biggest tip, is that actually never underestimate the power of yourself and what you give to it, because people want to find out about you. They don't really care either way what scent your candle is. Sometimes it's more about if they can see that you have a similarity to them and they can relate to you, they're more likely to buy from you. So that's, I guess it's more of a marketing tip, but it really works. And I would say to everyone, just do it. Just do a photo of you and tell me if you get more engagement. And they always come back and they're like, yeah, I got more engagement. And that's what you need. You need more engagement from followers on social media, because they will eventually convert into sales. So it is a long game with marketing, but that's my biggest thing, is that people sell. So put a baby in there, you'll be fine.
That's really good advice. Thank you. Yeah. I do really like that. And I can see what you mean, because yeah, I definitely personally scroll past pictures of products. Because I mean, you might think, you like you say, you might give them a like if you think they look nice, but yeah, generally you want to, I don't know, you want to find out something new and something interesting. And yeah,
well, the other thing is videos. A lot of people now have cottoned on to the fact that videos are a key point, and the only way that a video that would get more engagement than a person in it is if you've got a product like a skincare product or a scrub or something, and you take like a slow-mo of like it's squidging out onto a hand or something. That's when you'll get someone go, oh yeah, I want to see that, because again, it's like a tactile thing. It's something that they want to touch or look at or smell. So if you can get that across in the video, that's brilliant. But yeah, even then you probably need a human hand in there just to to identify with.
This is all great, Holly. Thank you. And thank you so much for everything you've shared. Right. You've told us so much about your business. I think it's really, it's just been really fascinating. I'm so pleased I could get you on, because I was really keen to talk to you because, as you say, you run kind of three businesses. Well, at least two businesses, let's say.
Don't freak me out if I think about it too much.
Okay, I'll leave it there then. Thank you so much for everything you shared.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening right to the end of this episode. Do remember that you can get the full back catalogue and lots of free resources on my website, vickyweinberg.com. Please do remember to rate and review this episode if you've enjoyed it, and also share it with a friend who you think might find it useful. Thank you again and see you next week. Hi, this is just a little note to say if you've enjoyed this episode, or indeed any of the episodes, and you would like to, I don't know, buy me a coffee or something, you can actually now leave tips. So there's a link to how to do this in the show note. Of course, do not feel obliged to do this. This is a free podcast. This will always be a free podcast. But as I say, if you want to buy me a coffee, you can do that via the link in the show notes.